Folks, we're back. This is the Jeff Landfield Show, which has basically become the Jeff and Matt Show. We're still trying to work on the branding on that. I'm a fan of the Meth Show, the Alaska Meth, but Matt Buxton is not a fan of that.
Hey, man, though, you know, with the changes in crime under Dunleavy, the new parole board chief, you know, I don't want to get in charge. You know,
I wrote about that. We'll talk about that. I think that that's an interesting choice. They chose Edie Grunwald, who former Lieutenant Governor, candidate for Lieutenant Governor, who has been a very outspoken crime advocate because she had suffered a huge tragedy. To me, that just seems...
She's in charge of the parole board.
Yeah, I mean, I put in my column, I said, if you folks are looking for parole in the next 4 years, don't pack your bags just yet.
Yeah.
And she's not even on the board. She's like the chair of the board.
Chair of the board, yeah.
So I don't know. I assume it's a five-member board. Most of these boards are five-member.
I don't know. You don't need to know things to be on the radio.
So many choices that have just really puzzled me lately with, you know, it's like for every good decision Dunleavy makes, like good commissioner or good pick, he makes these bizarre ones where you're like, huh?
Well, you know, it's kind of the same way with the Trump administration too, right?
There's some similarities. Yeah. You know, you like for Alaska, Trump, you know, the King Cove Road and the Anwar, and you got these great people that
you're into that sort of stuff.
Dude, I'm all about Anwar, baby.
Okay, there you go, yeah.
As they say, drill, baby, drill.
Yeah.
Anyways, folks, we're back. Jeff Landfield Show here with Matt Buxton. I have the Alaska landmine. Matt's got Midnight Sun. If you want to give us a call, 222-0317, 907-222-0317. If you're listening here in Anchorage or if you're streaming on the World Wide Web anywhere in the world, give us a call. We'd be glad to talk to you about any questions you might have or comments.
Or you can angrily tweet at us, too. That's always
a
good option. Yeah,
that does happen.
Yeah,
I was in a pretty aggressive conversation today with Mr. Art Chance, who you may have heard of.
He's a real winner.
He was just hired.
You're not really. He wouldn't be allowed on the radio, actually.
He wouldn't. He's a previous labor relations guy, director or something for the state, retired, who always rails about state employees and how they should fire everybody. He's cool though, because now he has a job, so he's double dipping.
Yeah.
So it doesn't. His logic doesn't apply to him. But I guess he has some job in the Department of Administration. And this guy is known for saying extremely offensive expletives on Facebook.
And we're not talking about just like...
We're
not talking about just like social justice kind of stuff.
And we're talking about I'm gonna F your girlfriend or wife and make her toes curl to people who disagree with him politically.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to meet you in a parking lot and I'm going to make you suffer pain.
You know, just restoring trust with the public right
now. Let's hire
that guy.
He's gonna be negotiating some contracts.
Yeah.
he's like the other side of the union thug mentality. He's like the anti-union thug mentality.
All right.
All right. So it's been a pretty busy week. The session started.
Yeah, we are on day 7 of the Alaska legislative session. The House still doesn't have a majority,
even though the Republicans keep claiming they're the majority.
Oh yeah, if you just say it enough, it will happen.
Their press releases and their social media. They refer to themselves as the Alaska House Majority, even though they had a press conference today where they clearly said they're trying really hard to get an organization.
No, man, what a hook and
that was weird.
Bait and switch kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, I saw that on went out Sunday night. They're going to have a press conference this morning, and you know, so it gets everybody thinking. No, is something going to happen? Do they have something figured out? Nope. About 2 minutes into the press conference, to say, yeah, we're still working on it. We'll let you guys know soon. We just thought it would be easier to do this instead of having you guys bug us all day.
Well, I knew it wasn't going to be.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't going to be announced because of the three people that were. It's three Republicans. They said we're going to Tammy Wilson, Dave Tallarico, Chuck Cobb. So I mean, you knew it wasn't going to be any kind of announcement.
Yeah. If it included like a Gary Knopp, that might have been a little different.
Oh yeah.
Just one. They were one letter off.
I did a podcast with him. That dude's straight G status.
Yeah.
That's a.
I'm impressed. Yeah, that guy's been doing.
That's a good thing about being in Juneau, I noticed. You know, I was there for 3 days last week. Like, it's so easy to just do in the Capitol. Do you want to do a podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, meet in the office in 30 minutes. We can just do it, you know. It's so much easy access to those folks.
So what do you think? Yeah, you got to go down as a dirty blogger.
I call it a news site.
Okay. Yeah. Independent journalism. How about that? As an independent journalist.
Yeah, no. So I've been down to the Capitol before. I've spent a little time there, not very much. I've, you know, kind of there for a day or something. But when I was there for 3 days and started the session, you know, walking around, talking to folks, seeing who's in the hallways, being there, I mean, you can cover it from here and you can get so much information. You can get 10 times more. Mm-hmm. And plus, you've been down there a lot for the context of who's talking to who in the hallway, when the you know, gavel goes off, when they're at ease, who's saying what to who.
Yeah.
The access to, like, you know, when you're writing an article, I did an article about the whole, you know, when they went to go next door and quote-unquote swear in Sharon Jackson. You know, Gabrielle Ledoux told me it was the most bizarre thing she's ever seen. That's a great quote.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much harder to get that if you're not there.
Yeah, yeah. And so I covered in session in person for five or six years now. And this is my second year doing it remotely. So
you were you were the news miner at the time, right?
Yeah.
So you actually were a regular press.
I had a desk and I had everything, yeah.
Yeah, so I applied for a press pass and it was issued by the Senate Rules Chair, and then it created a whole thing in the Capitol. I mean, it was on Twitter and the word got, because Coghill, the Rules Chair, had said this year, instead of just picking them up, that he wanted to talk to everyone.
Yeah, talk about decorum.
And I don't think I really doubt he even talked to everybody who got a press pass.
I doubt it too.
But he did talk to me, and I was told that it was issued, and he's disposed to give it to me, but based on some questions about my website, my blog, he called it.
Yeah.
Oh, so what's a blog? You know, I think a blog is a one-person operation that has...
Hey, I have another person working for me now, too. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
But all opinion. And in our case, we have five people.
You guys break news.
And we break news, and many of the stories we've broken have been picked up by the traditional media.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is an element of editorialism or of opinion to your site, too.
Yeah.
But so does ADN.
Right.
So does Newsminer. So does any news publication has opinion pieces.
Right.
In this case, we're just doing sometimes overlapping with the news part and then
you guys
opinion.
I think that's an important part of what I think keeps the sort of basics of journalistic integrity alive on these sites, like mine and yours, is that it's clear. We try to be clear that it is a crossover of the two, and we're not trying to lie about skewing it or anything like that. We're not trying to hide our sort of positions in it. So.
Well, there was a question, too, about what are the ethical standards? And I said, you know, I challenge you to find something I've written that I've, you know, been blatantly wrong about, and that if I have been wrong about something I haven't corrected, or that I've gone out of my way to use my platform to say something that's wrong, you know? I mean,
or malicious, yeah.
Or malicious. I mean, it
that's one of the big things about journalism, too, is that they don't talk about too much, is that incompetence is a defense against like libel lawsuits and stuff like that. If you just publish something wrong and you can say, well, I didn't know.
Yeah, with
that's
libel,
okay, yeah.
With libel, you have to, from what I understand, especially if
malicious,
it's public
yeah.
figures, you have to prove the person knew it was wrong,
mm-hmm.
and you have to prove the person did it with intent to harm.
Yep.
So and plus public for
I can't think of anything that you've done that covers that. I do know another website in Alaska that
might have a knack of doing
that sometimes.
Of course, there's the Republican Party mouthpiece. Must read, you know, which is I could give you off the top of my head five things that were just maliciously incorrect, meant to hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets all.
That's all right.
She seems to get the information. You know, they like her.
Yeah.
And then their other question was there's some pushback and. I think that had to do with probably David Wilson, that isn't a fan of me.
Yeah.
Can't say I blame him. He should watch how he behaves.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Natasha Von Imhoff I ran against, not a fan of me.
No.
But that's not an excuse. Government, legislature, governors, powerful, you know, people in government, they don't have the right to let people, to deny people access, press people access to questions or information.
Right.
They don't have the right to do that. I mean, that's very clear in the... I think we have a little First Amendment that talks about that. Are you going down to Juneau? What's your plan?
Yeah, at some point. We'll figure it out.
You're going to be... maybe we can bunk up and get like bunk beds.
Yeah. Just one queen bed.
Maybe one double.
Yeah.
It's chilly down there. I was down there, man. It was cold.
Yeah, it gets windy down there.
It was... It snowed. I had missed the snow. You know, I'm glad I came on a Monday because the Tuesday... A whole bunch of folks were on the morning flight to come to the swearing-in, and they got diverted to Sitka because of this fog situation.
Mm-hmm.
And for, like, the next 2 days, there was, like, no planes coming in or out. And then I left Wednesday night. I was supposed to leave at, like, 9. We didn't get out till like, midnight because the plane was stuck in Sitka.
Nice.
So have you dealt with that a lot, the fog situation? Or
you know, actually, when I went down, I would often just drive down to Haines and take the ferry because I was living there for 3 months plus, so it just made sense to have...
Yeah, if I get down, I think if I get down there, I'm trying to find a way right now to get down there. I think I'll probably drive and then I'll I'll probably do the Uber at night just to keep the folks, you know, keep the folks mobile.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a bit about
week one.
Week one. I want to talk about what I think was maybe one of the loosest events in recent history in the Capitol, which was the Sharon Jackson situation. Let's. I was there, but you were watching it.
Yeah.
Tell me how you heard about. I just love it when I have my weekly loose unit. I just love it when it's a slam dunk.
Yeah.
And this is a slam dunk week.
Well, so it was interesting. I mean, I think both of you and I were the first and only two, I think, that really talked about the problems that were going to be coming up for appointee Sharon Jackson, the House District 13 rep who is replacing Nancy Dahlstrom. So she's an appointment by Dunleavy. Basically, the main problem that we both outlined was that without a speaker in place, which is the result of not having a majority, they can't take messages from the governor and therefore can't appoint anybody.
I wrote about this, but then I also did a podcast with Kevin Meyer.
Yeah,
where he specifically, clearly, without mincing his words, said all I can do is swear folks in.
Well. So there is a point in your thing where he does say something kind of offhand, or maybe take messages. He does say he kind of gave himself just a tiny bit of room in there, even though from everything I heard from every other discussion he had, he said cannot take messages, or can't do anything beyond swearing
and he didn't tell the Democrats he was gonna. You could see by the looks on their faces when he tried to do it. So folks, if you didn't pay attention, because there's no speaker or speaker pro tem. The way to get anybody confirmed is the message from the governor goes to the speaker, and then the speaker relays it to the party of that person,
mm-hmm.
Republicans, Democrats. They vote. They have to have a majority, and then they get seated. And this happens, Walker did it with John Lincoln, Tiffany Zolkowski. Mm-hmm. Both of those messages went to Speaker Edgeman.
Mike Schauer.
And Mike Schauer. Mm-hmm. And remember when I broke that he wasn't even a Republican?
Yeah.
They had to go back. But the funny thing is, the identical scenario happened in 2003. And this is so funny because Lisa Murkowski won her House reelection for the state House. Her dad becomes governor. He's senator at the time, U.S. senator. He gets a bit loose and gets a little bit nepotistic. And he appoints his daughter to a Senate seat in December of 2002, right? Which leaves an opening for her House seat, which is the identical situation to when Sadler resigned.
And she just won it, yeah.
And she just won it. Guess who Murkowski appointed to fill Lisa's seat?
Oh, does her name start with
Nancy? Friggin' Nancy Dahlstrom.
Yeah.
This woman is like in the middle of all of this weird, it's like the stars have been aligned.
Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, I went back and got the journal, and same thing, speaker, they had speaker pro tem, and then Pete Cott was speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that guy? But the message from...
I showed up in Alaska in 11, so nothing happened before that, according to me, so...
Are you kidding?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay,
I'm just kidding, yeah.
Whoa, this guy. So the message from the governor to appoint Dahlstrom went to Speaker Cott. So the message this time from Dunleavy was addressed to Republican members.
Yeah, I think that's... They gave up the game there. They kind of recognized that they needed to do that. I think the reason a lot of this stuff sort of just lived on the blogs all up until the first day of session was because it's just me and you that were talking about it online, and nobody was really super sure about it, I guess. And so you never knew that was going to be an issue if you read kind of some of the mainstream stuff.
I talked to people that were, been around for a long time, people that are experts on the rules and procedures, and everybody told me, they said there's no way he can do that.
So, it sounds like a lot of people knew about it, but anyways.
So he tries to do it. Tuck actually was prepared for it. He told me he was prepared because he wasn't sure what they were going to try before, but then when they were told it wasn't going to happen, they didn't really expect it. But he had a really good response.
Yeah, he was ready.
And he was ready for it.
Read the rules. Then
I was in the gallery, the whole thing friggin'. They go at ease.
It was like a 30-minute at ease.
Meyer's on the phone. The Democrats are up at the front. Eastman's all around, of course. Republicans are huddled in the corner. And you're wondering, what's going to happen? And you got some of the reporters that are there. They're like, this is getting loose. I just love when they said that. And then eventually he said, we're adjourned.
Mm-hmm.
And he got caught.
Well, then
hand in the cookie jar.
Yeah.
Which I feel bad because Kevin, I think he was probably told to do it by somebody.
Yeah, I mean, whoever probably addressed the letter to the Republicans did. It was probably part of that.
So then, anyways, so they're going to meet the next day. And I was in my hotel. I was doing. I come back, and I get a text from somebody. Says, check out this Facebook Live from Representative Josh Rivak, who I've been a big supporter of. Mm-hmm. I never hid that, you know.
Yeah.
And I was going back to the Capitol. I was walking out. He was walking in. And they had gone next door with him, his staff, a camera for Facebook Live, David Eastman, Representative David Eastman, and Sharon Jackson to the courthouse, literally like right, mm-hmm. you could throw a rock at it.
Yeah.
And they go downstairs to the window where people go to get things notarized and get things like witnessed with a document.
That literally just says.
That says like she's the rep.
Yep.
And they caught this poor deputy clerk off guard. And people say he shouldn't have done it. You know, I feel bad for the guy.
He can notarize whatever he wants. You can get anything notarized.
Right, yeah, anything can be notarized. But I feel bad that, you know, even if he realized, and maybe he's not a political, maybe he's not politically, he doesn't follow politics every day.
Yeah.
But even if he knew, he's got two representatives telling him to do something.
Yeah.
And that's a really awkward position to put a guy in.
Yeah.
So they swear, they quote unquote swear her in. And it's like, it's bedlam after that. The whole Capitol was like
internet blew up.
Oh yeah,
everyone. I got a call immediately from like two. I got two or three calls.
I broke. Yeah. I don't want to brag, but I broke that sucker.
Yeah, I saw the tweet.
I happened to be the first one to be there. Yeah. I got the picture from the video, and then I go to the governor's press conference about the permanent fund, and there's like all these reporters. Have you been to those before? The governor?
Yeah.
Are they? I've never really been to them, so I can't tell. I just had this really. It was a really tense, awkward vibe in the room. Is that normal?
No.
People weren't talking. I mean, they were talking a little bit, but it was like real quiet, and like there was people just, it wasn't a very comfortable place where you could feel like you could just say something.
No. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you don't know who's listening there.
It was just, and then you got that Suzanne Downing woman. She was at the table with her little, I just can't, I see.
All right.
Makes my blood boil.
Okay.
Just seeing her. Okay. I have reasons for that.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I'm telling people about this. I go.
Yeah.
Sharon Jackson. I told this guy, one of these reporters, junior reporters, and then some other guy, like some reporter I don't know who he was, but I knew he was a reporter. Mm. And they were like, "Yeah, like BS. Like no way. I showed him the picture.
Yeah.
The video." And they were like, "What?" And nobody believed me at first. And then I tweeted it out there, and man, my phone blew up.
Yeah.
Who does that?
So they were citing a statute that basically says like public oaths of office can be administered by X, Y, and Z. You know, it includes like the lieutenant governor, deputy clerks, the U.S. postmasters can do this. But this is like specifically like it's not like there's another part of law that specifically says this is how legislators are sworn in.
Yeah, well, first of all, they have to be confirmed by a majority of the party.
Yeah. I'm seeing some like real far right people like talking about how that was legal. How dare you spread misinformation about how
totally not. And also it says lieutenant governor has to do it.
Yeah.
So there's two things. There's confirmation from your peers, your party members, fellow party members, and lieutenant governor has to do the swearing in.
Yeah.
So there's two major. I mean, it's a little, you know, isn't there a constitutional oath? Anyway, so the whole thing derailed. So there was supposed to be a House floor session that day. And that stunt derailed everything. They canceled the floor session, which also was going to... There was a deal on a pro tem, from what I understand. And also they had a deal on...
They were going to probably swear her in that night, is what I understood.
And they also had a deal on the pay. They were going to deal with like a resolution to be able to pay the House staffers. And it got... Man, I tell you what. You've been in the Capitol for some probably crazy stuff. It was like... You could just tell people were like... What?
I mean,
like, what just happened?
I think there was probably about like 5 to 10 to 15 minutes where people were like, "Is this legit? I don't know." And then
I never
and
thought
then
it. No,
pretty
I,
quickly,
maybe a few people, but I think everybody, anybody who's been around knows that's just it's just.
Yeah.
Not only was it not, I mean, ignoring the legal part, it just totally undermines the leadership of your. Caucus.
Well, you look at it, and so it kind of. So I mean. This whole thing, I feel like this was, it was a huge distraction. I mean, right, it's a lot of fun for people like you and me to laugh at and to joke about on Twitter. But, like, ultimately, this is going to be, like, a really minor storyline for this year, right?
Oh, well,
like,
it'll be a good skit, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it does, like, underline a lot of other issues that we have, which is, you know, Representative Gary Knopp has decided that he doesn't want to be part of this majority. He's sort of... without ever, I don't know if he ever really named names, but he pretty much made it clear that the reason he didn't want to be part of the 21-member majority is because one of those, everyone's the 21st member on any given vote, and one of those people you have to rely on is Representative David Eastman.
Well, and it was his idea from what I mean, it was pretty clear. He had the paper, he was reading, the video has now been deleted, but you know, if anything could have proved him right, this proved him.
Yeah.
Because the other thing it highlights is the lack of leadership or control that Dave Tallarico or whoever's in charge has over the group.
Mm-hmm. If they're going to go do something like this on their own, what else are they going to do? Are you going to wait for the rest of the session?
The funny thing is, and you know, I like I said, I'm not going to hide that I supported Josh Rivak, but Rivak and Eastman are both, and Sharon Jackson, they're all former military.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like there's a chain of command, and there's rules, and there's regulations, and you know, my dad was 25 years in the military, and you're always taught to follow the rules and follow the chain of command. And you don't go out and, I mean, could you imagine if military members tried to,
go swear myself in,
they'd probably be legitimately, if they did some kind of similar type of stuff.
They'd be kicked out,
They'd be in trouble. They'd be in real trouble.
Yeah.
But these guys can't get in trouble because, you know, they're elected and they're, I mean, they it's such a slim group. Of course they can. And then even Tallarico put out that statement that it was very carefully, I actually almost thought of like redoing it and saying, here's what he really meant.
Yeah. You could translate. I mean, what did he say? I appreciate the sentiment.
Appreciate the eagerness or
the sentiment. But that's basically like just. It's shut up is basically what he's trying
to
say.
And then it was, we're going to go ahead and do it, the process. We're going to follow the process. We're just supposed to follow
the Constitution, yeah.
The Constitution and statute. So thanks.
I mean, who knows where things are going right now down in Juneau, but I would say that if I'm one of those people who those Republicans are trying to win over, if I'm Republican Gary Knopf or any one of the 10 kind of moderate members in the Democratic majority, you know, like Stutz, Ledoux, Lincoln, you know, a lot of those people that you would ideally hopefully peel off to secure your Republican majority. I'm looking at it now and saying, no way, man. Especially if you have to, you know, the big thing, right, is that if Eastman wants to be part of that majority, if they want Eastman as part of that majority, that he's got to have health and social services chair.
Yeah, which is based on some of the
which
comments
is also,
made.
Well, yeah, I mean, who wants to sign off on that? I mean, sounds completely, I don't know.
I really wish I understood clearly. I mean, I was trying to do a podcast with him when I was down there. We couldn't make it work. Oh, we're getting a call here, folks.
All right, here we go.
Let me go to the phone here. Oh, geez. Hello. We're on with Jeff and Matt. How you doing?
Just first call of the day or what?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, that's a nice loud voice there. How you doing?
Yeah, hey, pretty good. This is Mark and Bethel.
Mark Springer, right?
Yes, sir. What's going on?
You're the marijuana board guy.
I am the chairman of the marijuana board.
I reported a little in my column yesterday, a little shakeup on the board. The guy, what's his name? Bennett?
Emmett.
Sorry, Emmett. Emmett. He's Emmett. Appears to be out.
Yeah.
He was one of the first ones, wasn't he?
He was he was an original member. Yep. So
Brandon
and
Emmett
and him and me and Lauren Jones were the three original members that were still on.
When's your term up?
Me and Lauren, 2020 next year.
So you got a little bit.
A little while.
So what's
what's on your mind?
What's going on? Do you have any questions for us?
Call caught a little bit of what you're talking about down there in Juneau. It's not the longest that they've gone without forming an organization.
It's not.
I think 1980. Yeah, no, 80, they went 21 days.
81. Yeah. It took. After that, there was a coup.
Yeah, then there's the coup, which didn't do
which
anything.
I'd love to see, by the way. I mean, I'm not wishing, like, it'd be fun to watch.
You know, the press conference that the majority had today, I think there was a little bit of telegraphy involved there.
They aren't the majority, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, they, you know, Dave Tallarico and...
They call themselves that.
Tammy and Knopf, you know. But I think there was some telegraphy there. I think they were... telling the governor that, we're going to be laying for the budget.
They said, I think the budget doesn't even come out until February 13th.
So that was
right?
It doesn't have to. That's the last day, yeah.
Tammy Wilson said, you know, this gives us a chance to do a lot of groundwork without the budget in front of us and to, you know, to hear the revenue forecasts and really get a handle on the fundamentals and do that. Almost, you know, as a committee of the whole, which would be a good idea. They kind of signaled that nobody is going to be left out of the budget discussions. You know,
well, I think I think one of the comments they said was it's going to be a radically or a drastically different budget than we've seen before.
That's what they're expecting. Mm-hmm. And who wouldn't, given who is putting it together, you know, the mystery woman from wherever
you got Donna, I Love Private Prisons, Ardoin.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, by the way, I just got tweeted, tagged in a tweet by Forrest Dunbar, and he says, I'll read this to you. I haven't read the article yet, but he says, let's see here. A department spokesperson said all possibilities are on the table, including privatizing the prisons. Jeff Lanfield in Alaska Landline called this when Dunleavy announced he was hiring Donna Ardoin. It's an Alaska Public article. Just came out.
I just heard that on the radio from the way over, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, this is no surprise based on our history with these folks. What
a lot of people might not necessarily know is that corrections is a constitutionally mandated function.
And you're in law enforcement, right, Mark?
No, who, me?
I thought you were in law enforcement.
No, that's the other guy. Sure. That's the good guy.
Okay, so you can't arrest me.
I can't arrest you.
Officially. No. What do you do out there?
Right now I'm kind of in the middle of work. I'm a grant writer and a community developer, and I kind of know my way around the Delta here a little bit.
I'm gonna have to get down there, and you're gonna have to show me around. And
yeah, you know, I mean, by rights, I should be commissioner of commerce. I don't know.
Well, we're gonna be watching. We're gonna be continuing to watch the marijuana board. I know there were some decisions recently about the on-site consumption
we passed some regulations that should be going to the lieutenant governor's desk. He has got some regulations that have been reviewed by the Department of Law that are on his desk. That he hasn't signed yet. So, and then at our, you know, at our next meeting, we have a new law enforcement member. He's a fish and wildlife lieutenant from down in Saldotna who's coming on board.
He's replacing
this week. We should find out who's taking Brandon Emmett's place.
Okay. Well, make sure to keep us updated. We appreciate you following us and giving us the information from Western Alaska
as
it comes out. All right, Mark. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
You bet. Bye.
Yep.
Like that guy.
Yeah.
He's pretty active on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I always appreciate people who kind of put their name behind something and on the internet.
Yeah, I like it. So where are we? I was going to follow up on the Sharon Jackson thing. I think the bigger thing there that's really could be highlighted is the whole situation of how she was chosen, you know, the three names. It was a whole bizarre event where both districts had to weigh in on who could be chosen. And she was arguing that District 14 people, she's in 13, mm-hmm. should be able to have a say in it from the Republican group. And then they pick these three names, and it's her, and then this one guy, this Craig Christensen guy, who ran in the primary, who was, you know, kind of making these outrageous remarks about Dan Sadler during the race. And then some other guy who's talking about, like, death penalty. And
yeah.
So you have a whole situation where you have 2 years of somebody who's going to represent a district without
not
even being elected.
Yeah.
And Dunleavy, you know, he probably could have gone off list and picked somebody kind of more normal or moderate or not so, but when Walker did it, they ate him alive.
Yeah, they freaked out.
Tuckerman
yeah.
called him Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
Anyways, where else? The Senate's pretty normal.
Well, so wait, one last thing though is that let's just play a little bit of fantasy booking here, but like, why does
role
Eastman
playing?
Yeah, why does Eastman why do you think Eastman has the feeling that he needs to do something like
yeah,
this?
We were,
like, why
we were,
pull
we were,
a stunt like
we were,
this?
We were saying that. I don't know. I was going to do a podcast with him, and it didn't work out. I'd like to, because I actually met him back in 2008.
Yeah,
when I was really big into the Ron Paul movement, and I went to the convention. He was there, and those were the good old days back when Randy
the
was
Revolution. Right?
Yeah, oh yeah,
is that what it was?
Ron Paul Revolution. Yeah, yeah. With a little love on
yeah.
The, so you know, he's not a dumb person. He went to West Point. You talk to him one on one.
Yeah,
you have a conversation. Have you? I mean, he's
a few times.
You know, he doesn't appear to be crazy. He doesn't appear to be like somebody who would do these kind of things. And even after he does them, he's so calm in the way that he talks about it. But I don't know what his motivation is. I mean, I think he thinks the only way to maybe get things done is just to create massive disruption. Yeah.
I don't know. I would take it as actually a sign that, you know, maybe we're a lot closer to a bipartisan coalition than we think. You know, a bipartisan coalition would have the effect of really sidelining him almost completely, where he goes from, you know, in a 21, 22 member Republican majority. You know, he's got a lot of power. He's got a lot of sway. Everyone does. But you go to a bipartisan coalition, A, he's not going to be a member of it, like certainly not a member of it.
No.
And B, you know, all of a sudden the policies are much more centrist. So I think, you know, it's probably an attempt to just kind of hold on, keep everything sort of split, keep everything really partisan, well, because then you know, under the Republican majority, he's
think about this. He's only power. He was only elected in 2016, so he's only been in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
For the last 2 years. Now, yeah. Now he tastes the majority.
Yeah.
And he – but you think – you go back to his role in the minority and some of the stuff he did over the – I mean, he was censured twice, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was censured one for the abortion comments from women in the villages, and then he was – the second time was the ethics complaint.
Yeah, leaking a confidential ethics complaint. Oops.
Whoops. Yeah, I mean, it's just it's tough, you know. And he seems to understand sometimes he understands kind of procedural stuff, which that's dangerous. When somebody really has a solid grasp of the procedural rules, you can really create, you know, havoc.
Although
you can just delay things for a long time.
Hasn't worked out that well so far.
No, well, it's worked out in creating a lot of problems.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
Just, you know, making people do things in what would normally want to do, and you have to override and vote the majority, you know. So let's talk about the Senate a little bit. I mean, the Senate relatively just totally normal.
Relatively.
I mean, there's nothing really, I mean, other than probably some
it's gonna be pretty
disagreements in their.
It'll be pretty conservative over there, but it has been for the last, since 2013. So.
I think some, with, you know, barring some disagreements within their majority about things like permanent fund and SB 91, I mean, they just, it's like going from the Senate to the House when I was there. It's just, everything was just totally normal.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the really for them. I think the conflict that'll be interesting is just to see how these Republicans over in the Senate kind of handle the policies and priorities of Dunleavy. You know, I think a lot of the House Senate I would kind of characterize as much more like kind of the pro business Republicans. I would say, you know, that they're your Chamber of Commerce types for the most part. You know, they
Birch.
Yeah,
Von Imhoff.
You know, they want
Coghill.
They want a stable budget. They want a, you know, they probably want some capital spend in there. They don't want to touch oil taxes. They kind of don't care about the PFD. You know, insofar as, you know, they really don't want an income tax. They don't mind a sales tax if they push them enough, and they really don't mind getting rid of the PFD, because for that, a lot of them and a lot of their constituents, I would argue, it's not a big priority.
Yeah, if you look at like,
over $100,000 a year.
If you look at Birch and Von Imhoff, I mean, the people they represent generally aren't really, you know, as concerned about the dividend as the folks in, you know, Mountain View or, you know, rural Alaska or, you know, parts of poor, you know, areas where people depend on it more. But, yeah, the interesting approach Dunleavy took on the permanent fund, you know, restoration of the three-year staggered over 3 years.
Pay it out over 3 years, yeah.
I think actually it's I think that's smart, because it makes it more palatable for people to vote on a smaller draw each year than one big one for like $3 billion.
But as somebody who would care about the PFD, if you want it back, I don't want to trust the same group of legislators to do it twice, 2 years in a row. Let alone a new group, is you'll have a whole new election in 3 years, you'll have a whole new legislature in 3 years.
So. I think some people are going to say we voted for the big one. You know, you guys have the cool clock on your website, though.
Yeah.
Days, what is it? Days.
Yeah, Mike. Days without the mega PFD, without the $6,700 PFD. I mean, that was his campaign promise, right?
The other potential.
I never mentioned a 3 year payback.
The other potential problem with this, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm having some lawyer friends look at it, but there could be a potential. Well, there's two issues. One is there's a case, Zobel versus Williams, which was 1980. If you folks don't know, when the permanent fund was originally established, it was based on a kind of a tier.
You get more money approach. The longer you were here. Yeah.
So people who were here from 59, they got the full payout, and people who were here from, you know, 60 or 70 or 75, they got less. And there was a challenge based on the 14th Amendment, the Equal Rights Clause. And it went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And Zobel was this couple that sued, and Williams was the revenue commissioner. And they said you can't differentiate on dividend payouts based on residency requirement. You know, you can set a residency requirement to get it, but once you meet that, you can't, you know, treat people differently. Right. And I don't, you know, I've talked to different people. Some have said they don't see it as an issue. Others have said, if you read, and I read through most of it, and it's, have you read it?
I've read the briefs of it, yeah.
There's some pretty clear parts about you can't treat people differently based on, so this would potentially treat somebody who was here this year who didn't qualify in 16 differently than the person right. who was but then they can argue it's a reimbursement. But the other thing is, ignoring the Zobel, somebody who qualified in 16, 17, or 18, let's say for this year, 16, who doesn't qualify this year, they might say, where's mine?
Yeah, they don't get it. Yeah, so
there's probably going to be a lawsuit.
There's a lot of military families that might fall under that. So
there's just people who have. I mean, look, we've had people 2 years in a row of people leaving the state, more people leaving than coming in, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, I think regardless, there's going to be a lawsuit. But the Zobel thing's interesting because of the specific language about you can't. And I don't think it would be. I think it would be two checks. It'd be this year's PFD, and then it'd be the refund of whatever the $1,000. But it's interesting because it's pretty clear about establishing the dividend based on residency. You can't treat people differently. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this kind of, but then there's some language about, unless there's a real purpose, you know, a specific reason. Yeah. And I guess there is a campaign promise. Is that a reason?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of where I fall down on this. Like, I don't think that paying out big old dividends is like a great thing for the state of, for the future of Alaska, especially the financial sort of state of the state. But like, I don't know. It was his campaign promise. Like he should at least be held to his one campaign promise.
What were the big things? I mean, I'd say there was two things he ran on. And
crime bad.
Yeah.
PFD good.
Right. Crime, and then kind of the overall restoring the faith in government message. But yeah, no, crime and PFD. And we didn't really hear a lot from him over the course of the election because Walker and Begich were kind of going at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder how the average person, you know, because people don't follow the news. A lot of folks don't even know about this plan probably yet. So when they hear they're going to get $1,000 extra and not the $3,700.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
They might get angry.
Yep.
What else? So, yeah, I just say Juneau was interesting. You know, Monday was before the legislative session kicked off. There was a Democratic fundraiser, Republican fundraiser. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I went to Wednesday, there was like the Centennial Hall welcome reception from Juneau.
Yep.
That was like packed, baby.
Oh yeah,
there was like everybody and their brother was in there, and not just like legislators.
That's how you get around a lot of the lobbying and disclosure stuff. If it's open to the public,
yeah, it was lobbyists, it was legislators, family members, state officials, state employees.
It's pretty good food, too.
It was great.
I always like stopping by there. Great reporters love that sort of stuff.
Great spread. Yeah, really good. And then they had Monday night. They had what's called the pinning ceremony at the building across the street. Or behind the Capitol, and it was supposed to be like pinning the new legislators, and it was pretty good food, and everybody was legislators, their family. I was there, but they didn't actually do the pinning because there was no speaker.
Yeah,
so they kind of it was kind of a not. Senator Geisel spoke and said, I've been new and work hard and that and nice message, but it was just kind of like, what's up with the pinning? Nobody knew what the. In the past, when they did the actual signing of the oaths in the lieutenant governor's office, was it orderly or was it just kind of chaos?
In the lieutenant governor's office? Oh, I think it's just like going and take turns.
Yeah, because it was just a line of people, and it didn't really seem like there was any. I didn't know if that was normal or abnormal.
I don't know. I never went to one of those. Why would you go to one of those as a reporter?
It's in the Capitol.
Yeah,
it's in the third.
So, yeah.
It's funny how the governor's level is the third floor. And then, first, everything else is like...
I mean, if you think about that, it is pretty weird that the entire two chambers of Alaska's government are housed in the same building.
Yeah, you'd think they'd be somewhere else, in their own little area.
Yeah.
Because you see people walking around and you're kind of like, oh, hey.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Yeah, I always thought it was kind of a weird sort of like, I don't know, sort of in the pocket. I mean, well, Alaska's got a very strong governor, right?
Where did you stay when you do you have a hotel or do you get a rent an apartment?
Different apartments and bounce around.
You go to the Triangle?
Yeah.
I was there. It's like,
oh, yeah.
That's a spot.
I heard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh. You got some spies out there, huh?
Yeah, man.
The guy that physically attacked me at the skits last year at Salt, he was there. We're cool now. He said hi to me. We're having a little chat.
He shoved you. Was it a punch?
He punched me in the friggin' collarbone. Okay. Yes, it was not a no. It was.
It wasn't
I had
a
little
boom.
I'm not complaining. I'm not a baby. I didn't even think about any pressing charges. But there was a mark. I mean, it wasn't like He came at me, bro.
Yeah. You know, in my time covering it, I never got punched. I mean, you guys doing something wrong.
You have to go harder.
Yeah.
That's your dream. A dream of any probably journalist or reporter is to get, like, attacked by a public official.
I was once told by Pete Kelly that I sucked. So that was fun.
Serious or joking?
Oh, it was... With him, it's a little bit of both.
Let me pull up what else is going on here. So, yeah, we got Neil Foster as a pro. He's actually a great choice because not a very controversial.
He's been in both the Republican and the Democratic majorities.
So how about some of these gubernatorial appointments? So we talked a bit about Grunwald, parole board.
Yeah.
Joe Riggs, everybody's favorite candidate, who decided, you know, gay bashing was a good campaign tactic.
Yeah, and is it mental health trust?
Yeah, he's on the, let me read this here. Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority Board of Trustees. I made a joke, and I said maybe he can, if you didn't know, he was the one who was behind the sick attack, him and Zach Freeman, who's now the press secretary for the Republicans
in the House. Attacking another candidate for being gay,
Albert Fogel. And Albert Fogel,
he's got a job.
He's on the ADA board, ADA AEA.
There you go. So, I mean, I think that's one of the things I think that I often overlook, too, is that, you know, governors can really reshape a lot of policy by the appointments they make. You look at, you know, for example, the Marijuana Control Board. Who's on there depends a lot. You know, you take away Emmett and put someone else on there, or the public safety member, and then all of a sudden, you know, a lot of policy changes really quickly depending on who's on that board. So this is something that it's going to be really hard to, like, measure how quickly, how big of an impact it will actually have. But, you know, it's an interesting thing is that a lot of this week the Senate is already pushing ahead with hearing a lot of the confirmations, doing the confirmation hearings this week.
Yeah, some of those, typically those are
I've heard that they're pushing to get this all done quick.
Typically, those are later in the session.
Yeah.
And they're starting, I think there's even some this week.
Yeah, which is pretty unusual. So basically, it means they're trying to, like, put the seal on their overhaul of government right away.
How about, it's what the House Republicans did. They had their press conference the day after the election and staked their claim and spiked the football. And how about Brooke Ivey? Did you hear about her?
Yeah.
So she's over at AOGA, Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
Yeah, the only thing that's super notable about that is she used to work for Wilkowski.
Right. It's like the irony
that
is
that was
not...
like back in the day, though. I mean, if you look at Gren, the employment with Jason Gren, he was, you know, he helped cut.
Yeah, he was a pro, oil and gas guy. But it's
makes
just
a lot more sense.
It's,
that way,
it's still, you know, it'd be like me in 5 years going to like Alaska Center or something. You know? Yeah. I wouldn't do that, but it's just kind of funny.
Or are you going to work for the Senate Republicans?
I'd probably do that.
Yeah.
That'd be...
This group seems actually, I don't know, I like this arrangement of legislators a little more than last
I don't one. Think Gies was a big fan of me. I've written about her years ago, when she needed my help on something. And Wilson obviously isn't a fan of me.
No.
They wouldn't hire me, would they?
No.
We're going down the list.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to...
I like Coghill. Nice.
I got so much respect for that guy.
His personal beliefs are... abhorrent usually, but you know,
but he's one of the guys who has some social beliefs that are, you know, you could call them very socially conservative, you know,
abhorrent,
but he's one of the guys who he has his beliefs, but I don't think he judges people. I think he would be the first one to help somebody that he thought lived a horrible sinful life. I think he'd be the first one if they needed help I think he really follows the real teachings of you know, the Bible and Christ. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's one of these folks who preach it, but then they judge.
Right.
I got a lot of respect for him. And Chris Birch, I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think who else.
Stedman's been fun.
Stedman, so you wrote, didn't he kind of like, what'd you call it, the Burt Locker?
That's not me. That wasn't original, but that
So what happened? I didn't see he yelled or he got mad?
No, so he used to be, I mean, he was the co-chair for Senate Finance under the bipartisan coalition back in the day, so up until 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just kind of known for being a real... taking control of the situation.
Well, sometimes you need that.
Yeah. So I mean, it was you know it's his way or the highway, to put it lightly, I guess. And so, you know, this year he set out expectations that there will be, you know, no food at the table. But you know, his expectation is that we're going to run things quickly and efficiently. And I think the first day halfway through the session, I think he had to yell at everybody to get back to the table. And so, you know, it's not necessarily anything particularly, like, notable.
There's that funny picture we got, somebody sent us for the Alaska Stalker column, that for the party at the ale house or whatever on election night. Mm-hmm. He was sitting there with these earplugs in his ears. You know, there was like live music, and it was like Bert, you know, like with the "Get Off My Lawn" earplug Stedman.
Pretty much, yeah,
because he's just standing there with this.
Yeah,
like,
but you know, he's a really smart guy.
He lives. I talked to him a little bit. He lives on his boat.
Yeah, there was a year where they had trouble doing session because he was on his boat in between home and set in Juneau.
Yeah,
he was sailing in.
I guess he sails it, or I don't know if he sails it.
There's
or
a lot of people
motors it, but he like
a surprising amount of people that live in boats down in Juneau.
Yeah, so he's
quite a few people.
No, I like, you know,
makes you appreciate showers.
Stedman's another one
standing up straight.
I like Machicki. The only thing I like about Machicki is sometimes he gets, if you write about him and it's not basically extremely favorable, he's not thrilled about, you know,
yeah,
which is odd because like people are in politics, but I like him. I got no really qualms with him, but yeah, no, I think some of them in there just are not Landfield fans. I mean, they all like you, right? You don't really.
I don't know. I'm not there to be. Not there to get popular.
No, nobody is. But I think in my case, I've gone above and beyond on the.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where my stock necessarily sits with them nowadays. But I know back in the day, I was considered a reasonably fair reporter.
Have you ever thought about doing like a press job or for the government, like any group or legislative or?
No, I mean, I think after the 2016 elections, I really reconsidered things a little bit about whether or not I wanted to be more directly engaged in creating good in the world. Like, I don't know. It's cheesy, but I went and got this job and got more involved in some podcasts. And
do you feel like, you know, from the Newsminer days to the Midnight Sun, do you feel like you have more freedom here? And
yeah.
Like, what are the benefits? And
I mean, I don't have an editor now.
You're the editor.
Yeah. So it's been fun. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, working in a newsroom in that collaborative setting, you know, you work with people regularly. Like, that kind of setup is really nice. I think it helps to develop stories and helps to bounce ideas, and it kind of keeps everyone honest.
If I'm writing something that's, you know,
lonely sometimes.
If I'm writing something that's a bigger story that I think is more impactful than just some, you know, I do send it to some people to look at, because once somebody else looks at it, they go, "Do you really want to say that?"
Yeah,
and I go,
"Yeah,
maybe not."
So I don't know. As far as jumping to another job at this point, I'm not really looking for one.
Yeah, I think I just go back to the session. I mean, it's just bizarre.
Had fun. You want to get back?
I got
to
get down
there,
baby. I got to get down there. There's so much energy.
Like a drug for you, yeah.
It's. I mean, especially when you get, you know, when you get something so good, and you're the only one who kind of really knows what's happening,
yeah.
And you know, some of the other, I think the other news, you know, the ADN or the Newsminer or KTV, whatever, they have to. They those folks can't just write a story and put it up.
Mm-hmm.
They have to send it to an editor, or if they're doing TV, they have a different kind of timeline and.
Yeah,
they have.
You know, what's tough too is, you know, I would imagine if you're down there and it's really boring, go do something else, you know, or hang out or go check out the bars or whatever. But like, if you are especially for the TV guys, there's a lot of pressure, but you got to do something almost every day. So if there's nothing going on, you might be stuck doing.
You look for these feel good stories.
You might be stuck doing something that's really boring. So it is kind of an interesting sort of. It's just a completely different kind of animal, I think.
So you are planning on going down at some point?
Yeah,
I like the idea of the bunk. Well, you said a queen, right?
Yeah, we can do double and make it work.
I
just take my vehicle down and lay the seats down in the back and just leave them there.
That's even more cozy.
Yeah,
I mean, that's that could be a story in itself.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
imagine that picture.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring my dog too.
What about the girlfriend? Is she not keen on you going away, or kind of get maybe she likes you to.
Maybe it
gets a little, you know.
No, we don't. When we went down to session together once. Well, she was working a job down there, and so we were. Yeah.
Well, I can't wait till this budget gets. I really want to see this Dunleavy budget. And
So that's a fun thing. So one of the things that Senator Donnie Olson mentioned as a possibility is like, better not be $1.6 billion unallocated cuts, because legislature's done this before, where they say, okay. We can't decide what to cut because we don't want to be politically unpopular, basically. And so, therefore, administration, go find a 20% cut to this department. It happened recently. And then they came back and said, okay, let's close the Pioneer Homes. And then and they said, oh, we didn't mean for you to cut that. And so so he raised this possibility as this happened. I've heard that Don Arduin and Dunleavy and company are all looking at very specific cuts. So, But I think it's going to be actually a really interesting conversation to finally have about, like, what are we going to get rid of?
He said,
it's not just, like, a percentage cuts, but, like,
he said,
wholesale things.
Expenditures must match revenues.
Yeah.
Which we're looking at three-some billion.
Yeah.
What strikes me is just, which strikes me as this whole thing is just totally preposterous, is the Republicans, when they were in charge of everything, they tried to make cuts, you know, $5 million here, $10 million here to the ferry or to something. And, you know, you'll have 100 people call up and scream about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they restore it.
Yeah.
So, you know, they went from, I think the top peak budget when the capital budget was pumped up was almost $8
billion. Mm-hmm.
So they've gone from 8 in 2013 or 14, I think it was, down to about, you know, 4.5 or something.
Yeah.
So that's almost
a
50%
cut,
right?
Yeah.
So then you're going to go down, they want to go down another billion, but they can't cut 5 or 10 million. It, you know, a billion's 1,000 million.
Yeah.
And they over 5 or 10, it's like hell's freezing over because everybody has some constituency for some project or some program.
I think that's a healthy conversation for us to be having. I mean, we've always kind of heard that, like, you know, we need to be deciding what we want. And I think for a lot of people, it's going to be tough to, like, stomach Dunleavy being at the head of that discussion, especially when he's got a line item veto power. So whatever the legislature comes back and restores, he could just cut on his own. But I think it's going to be really, I think it will, I think, be a good conversation for people if Alaskans did vote, they essentially voted for Dunleavy, which they voted for big dividends, no taxes, and
smaller government.
Quite with a question mark.
Where's the money? I mean, you look at, but with the bulk of it's education, healthcare,
right?
And then you have debt service obligation,
right? You got
PFDs. So after all that,
there's a
little more to deal with. But if you look at the bulk of the budget, I mean, it's really, you have to start looking at consolidation of schools, which I think in some cases, you know, might make sense if you do it correctly. But it's hard because, you know, what's it? We fund a school with 10 kids, right?
Yeah.
So the way to deal with that is you raise the number to 50 kids or something.
So but
then you have
to forcing a bunch of people to relocate.
But then you have the issues. So again, not an easy thing to do because some of those, you know, schools are spending 50, 60, 70 grand per year per kid, which, you know, it's difficult to justify
just,
that in the long term. But yeah, it's, and then healthcare. I mean, there's all these different matching money for Medicaid, and there's all these different things that people rely on. I think there's waste in government. I just don't think it's $1 billion. You know, I don't think it's anything close to $1 billion.
This is what they're planning on doing. So I think, I mean, at least if they can put down $1.6 billion of cuts on paper, let's have it. Like, I'd like to see that and like to have that discussion. I think it'd be really
interesting
to look at. Because
they must be watching the price of oil and just pissing their pants, just thinking, damn. I mean, this is what Walker inherited. You know, he won, and the price was. I watched an interview of Walker right after he won, and it was in 2014, and he said, you know, we got to watch. You know, this price of oil, it's really concerning. He goes, it's getting around 70, and it's really concerning because it was, you know, way above 100.
Yeah.
And, you know, imagine, like, now 70 is like, woo!
Yeah.
But he's talking about, so now it's down to, have you checked it recently?
No.
I think it was below 60.
Yeah.
Let me pull this up here real quick.
Well, there was one of the only really substantive presentations we had in the last week, which actually had a TJ Presley write about it for me. You can go check that out on the Midnight Sun, a new contributing writer.
I saw you guys have a new guy there, huh?
Yeah.
Look at you. You guys
so
are
yeah,
just
he'll probably
all the
do
action.
A couple articles a week for us. But
61.
Yeah, so he broke it down. And one of the big things, one of the big takeaways is that, hey, look, there's not a lot of expectation for new oil to be coming online either, especially in any sort of reasonable time to affect our budget. We're looking at 2026.
The biggest thing is oil surge. They're talking about five or six years with their, you know, but that's still, it's probably optimistic, but even though that's still years away.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's really no, I mean, that's sort of the takeaway is that there's really no new revenue as far as resource revenue on the table in any sort of timely fashion. So
yeah, $61 as of last week.
Ooh, boy.
So they were originally, it was 675 or 74. Yeah. They revised, you know, 65.
Yeah.
And now it's at 6. I think it was even below 60.
It did drop below
ago.
60, yeah.
Horrifying.
Yeah,
because the hour goes by quick. I think we should.
You want to stick around in Alaska? I think this is the conversation a lot of people need to be having. Is like, what do we want long term? Do you want to have like good schools? Do you want to have like? Because I'm 30. I want to have kids someday. I want to have a family here.
Look,
I want to be able to buy a house.
You look great, by the way.
Oh, thank you. And I'm looking around at a lot of other young people, and a lot of young people my age are looking at Alaska and being like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't think I can stay here.
A really good friend of mine, very smart, formerly worked for the Walker administration, super smart.
Yeah.
Just moved. She just moved.
Yeah.
And I don't want to move. I like being here. My friends are here. I'd say the crime thing lately has been something I'm not really enjoying.
Yeah.
Even when we leave here in the studio, it's like what happens outside on Fourth Avenue. It's worse than I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I don't have kids, and if I did have kids, I'd go out of my way to make sure that, you know, no matter where they went to school, they'd have a good education, and I'd push that. But yeah, no, I could see why people, younger folks especially. I mean, I lost my job last month. I've been trying to find work, and I'm not a dumb guy. You know, I think I have skills, and it's been a bit challenging for me to find a job. I think part of that might be due to who I am. I mean, I think some people, one company told me, we like you, but you're a bit of a liability. You know, that's what they told me. That I was like, appreciate the honesty. No, but I think a lot of folks look at what's, you know, they look at how Alaska is now and how it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And they think, are we on a positive path? Are we on a positive track? Or are we on a place where we're going to have massive cuts to the budget and, you know, police and all these different prosecutors and schools?
I would say, you know, that a good government doesn't necessarily equal the kind of like future we want, but you know, those are the sort of fundamentals that make it easier to open your private business and do good business. Like, you could, does anybody want to go open a business on Fourth Avenue right now? Like, if you got to worry about crime and stuff like that, like, those are the sort of things that, like, I would say are big kind of breaching thing, overarching things that we hope could be taken care of. But
I would say in some ways we're, and I think about, I'll be very honest, I think about this all the time, we're somewhat of a microcosm of a larger nationwide issue where there's so much political division, and it's like everybody, I have friends just over that whole thing with those protesters in D.C. or those that Native American guy and those kids, you know, and it's like people have a different, I don't care what happened. Those kids were acting disrespectful. I mean, you watch the video. But I have good friends of mine who are, you know, messaging me, like good friends of mine saying, you know, horrible things to me because I happen to think differently about.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's days where I just think, you know, I'd love to get out of the country. You know, I just want to go somewhere where I don't have to worry about how people treat each other.
Yeah.
And I think it's getting worse, you know, every day. And now we're going to have another election coming up pretty soon. People are already filing to run for president, and it's going to start all over again.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of this is unsustainable, I think. I think, you know, just how nasty people treat each other. I mean, hopefully there's some kind of, like, come to the light kind of thing, but...
Come to Jesus?
Yeah. I don't know. But, like, you know, Can we continue to treat each other so terribly online? I mean, I guess maybe we're proving it. We're doing a pretty good job at that. But, you know, I'd hope that
there's days where I just want to totally get off of it. I just want to get. But, you know, because of what I do with my website, and it's tough, you know. But there's days where I just miss kind of like going back to just talking to people and interacting with people. You know, we're old enough to remember pre-social media days when things were a lot different.
Yeah. I think that there's.
We got about 45 seconds left before we have to.
Yeah, sign I mean, off. I would hope that, you know, maybe in the next week, people go out of your way to like interact with people in person or something like that.
Yeah, talk to somebody. Yeah. Maybe you don't agree. Be nice to them. You know, have a conversation and think maybe there's something we might agree on.
Say thank you more often.
Yeah. Well, thanks for tuning in, folks. Jeff Landfield here with Matt.
Thanks
Buxton
for listening, everybody.
Every Monday, we'll be back next week. As long as I'm not in Juneau, I might be in Juneau.
Oh yeah.
We got to teach you how to work the board here, Matt.
Oh yeah.
I think you found your calling in radio.
Yeah.
We've together found our calling.
Just gotta talk really low.
Keep it good. All right, folks, we'll see you guys next week. Landline Radio.